Greetings from Seattle in the Northwest homeland. This is Andy Donner. Months ago, on Radio Free Northwest, I spoke at length regarding the state of the white nationalist movement in general and the state of anti-Northwest imperative naysays specifically. That segment went on long enough that I decided I needed to sum up my thoughts at a later date. That's been too long coming, and I apologize for that. Between then and now, there were quite a few major developments which necessitated focus elsewhere. And that's probably for the best, too, since the summation of my thoughts ended up being longer than I wanted, and it turned into this shortcast. This is going to become my canned response to probably half of the communications which come my way. If I've given you the link to this material, please don't take it as an insult, since it's absolutely not meant that way. That might be hard to understand, especially since I have to make remarks which could be considered condescending. Again, it's not meant that way, so I need you to bear with me and take this for what it is. This is a doubly hard item for me to release because I initially wanted to make a point involving a pretty profound analogy which didn't end up passing muster. At a party meeting shortly after my last RFN appearance, Comrade Don Welke, whom you've all heard on RFN and the call-in shows, poked a hole in my strategy, and pointed out that I was more or less trying a sort of psychotherapy by way of podcast on you all. He thought this was doomed to failure from the outset. I didn't want to agree with him, since I thought I could perhaps get through to a few of you if I were terribly clever, but upon deep reflection, it dawned on me this is the same failed strategy the entire white nationalist movement has employed for several decades, so I reworked how I planned to make my point. That point, by the by, is that the Northwest Front is now, and has been for some time, the white man's white man. To put that more clearly, the white nationalist movement can be stratified by two very specific criteria based on how the Northwest imperative is received and processed. Firstly, is there a viable plan involved? And secondly, is someone actually following through with that plan? As yet, only the Northwest imperative meets both criteria, and I don't anticipate this changing. Ever. Okay, that's nothing I haven't said before, so why all this fuss and bother? This time around, I had planned on using this analogy I came up with to compare and contrast behaviors of various white nationalist factions or grouplets or whatever with the party and the Butler plan, but like I said, that's not really feasible. Nonetheless, I still need to make sure my point actually gets across in light of the great galloping goo-boo I covered last time I was on RFN. And yes, I fully realize I've taken way too long between these submissions. I'm still going to compare and contrast typical white nationalist behavior with that of non-whites we've come to know and love to hate. Hopefully, I can convince one or two more of you out there to actually do that introspective self-critique required to adjust the white character problem. One of the favorite items for white nationalists to point out about other races, particularly niggers, is that regardless of how much is done to prop them up, it's never enough, and the mud population of the world will forever expect more from us. Whether we're talking about the war on poverty, grants and scholarships, entire federal departments which do nothing but employ minorities to keep them from rioting, or foreign aid programs to poor countries, which never seem to actually make anything better, white people and white countries are always told it's their fault and more is demanded. This is perhaps the most annoying feature of the non-white races. There's just no helping them with their problems because they themselves are the problem. Short of physical separation, there's no workable solution. But wait a second. Do white nationalists do this to the Northwest Front? They sure do, on a regular basis, no less. I have a couple different examples of this which affect me personally, but this all applies to the party as a whole. Right after coming home, some years ago, I was approached by the son of a friend I met prior to migrating off of the now-defunct white nationalist email list. For the record, they're both great people, and I'll always be glad to have met this other comrade, so this isn't intended to call either of them out. Anyway, this son of a friend flat-out asked me why I personally, and the Northwest Front generally, were not doing more about the race situation. Keep in mind, I had just gone through the process of job hunting from 2,000 miles away, securing a job, securing housing, and then packing up and moving to Seattle. Upending my whole life after spending a significant portion of my free time over the course of the prior year preparing to do so somehow wasn't good enough. Another example comes in the form of admonishment by way of listener comments on RFN episodes. My favorite example of such came several months ago from a British comrade suggesting the party needs to step up in general, and I in particular needed to step up to handle things like fundraising. As well as I'm sure this comrade meant, this was odd. For starters, I don't know squat about fundraising, and I'm certainly not going to learn by making mistakes on something as important as the party. And if that weren't enough, this was on the heels of my having done 3 whole episodes of RFN and having produced a large volume of panel discussion segments with comrades Don and AJ. The amount of time that went into this was outrageous. It was well worth it, to be sure, since it helped clear the deck for some other very necessary activities, but it was followed by a suggestion I somehow wasn't doing enough. Okay, I'm not trying to compare our people to niggers and the like. Calling attention to odd ideas and behaviors, though, is fair game. Everyone thinks they're helping us out by suggesting such things, but it just isn't so. Whether or not it's intended, the implication of these remarks is that the party isn't doing enough, and, just like accusations made against white people in general, everything is our fault regardless of how much we actually get done. Admittedly, it's nowhere near what we would like to accomplish, but until you all give us the means to do, I don't know, whatever it is you think you want done, demanding more isn't going to get you anywhere. Another incredibly amusing habit of non-whites, and again, niggers in particular, is their assumption of acceptability and passability. That is, non-whites tend to behave however they like because they have some notion the rest of us are obligated to approve of them and even encourage their behavior. I don't feel like I need to elaborate on this particular example because we're all far more familiar with this than we ever wanted to be. This is one of the especially disgusting sorts of displays white people are confronted with, so it almost pains me to bring up a parallel in the white nationalist movement. And before I do so, I need to make a disclaimer to explain my upcoming commentary, which involves our attitude to other white nationalist outfits and their contributions, or rather, their lack thereof. Please try to understand this. It's not complicated, but it's going to freak most of you out because, however I dress it up, I'm coming down hard on an awful lot of you. It's not that the Northwest Front has any real disdain for non-Northwest activity, unless, of course, that activity is something outright harmful. No disdain, to be sure, but let's admit what's really going on with things other than the Northwest imperative. Nothing. They're not relevant. They offer no solutions to white genocide and will ultimately have no impact on whether or not the white race has a stable existence outside of the next few decades. This talk I've put on so far has drawn comparisons between non-white behavior and stupidity in the white nationalist movement. If I were to cast this analogy within the framework of the cuck-servative meme, I would have to label non-Northwest white nationalism as cuck-nationalism, or more appropriately, white cuctionalism. Yes, I'm fully aware a handful of you produce amazing media and propaganda. But let's get real. It's no more than a handful of you, and even though the quality of your output is quite high, it's still not relevant to anything resembling a solution. You is kind, you is smart, and you is important, but you also has no impact whatsoever on white genocide itself, and you never will. The white race would be far better off if all of this other activity never occurred because the people producing it were too busy with their Northwest migrations, so that they could then put their talents towards promoting the single viable alternative to our race's imminent physical extinction. And back to my main point. Non-whites, and niggers especially, are plagued by assumptions of acceptability, but so are white cuctionalists. Over the 4 years since I came home, a very large number of people have swaggered up to me, mostly online, thankfully, with the assumption that I'm going to approve of them, even though they're highly dysfunctional, both as individuals and in whatever white cuctionalist thing they've chosen to adopt as activism. This seems to boil down to a mild disdain for all things lefty and the use of what they think is white nationalism as a vehicle for expressing their own personal brand of screwiness in front of other screwy people. Now, if I were wrong about this, then every white nationalist would be actively involved in the Northwest imperative for reasons already stated. I've been on this point for long enough, so I'm going to wrap it up and move on. Like niggers, a surprisingly large portion of the white nationalist population out there expect to be met warmly when they get in touch with the party about things which have no bearing whatsoever on the survival of the white race and are confused by our reply, or possibly our lack thereof. This is almost always because we observe a significant disconnect between any solution to white genocide and whatever it is people want to talk to us about. And more importantly, just like the niggers who think they're automatically entitled to approval, there are an awful lot of you out there who think the Northwest Front is somehow obligated to acknowledge you and approve of whatever you're up to just because you're vaguely pro-white. And in some cases, it's even worse. Lately, the trend on most social media platforms I use for communication has tended towards some vague notion that I should electronically pat someone on the back for being mildly upset about our political situation in general. If you want our accolades, you need to do what is required to come home and help the Northwest Front become a functional revolutionary party. As I've made clear today, anything short of that is irrelevant because it will make no tangible progress whatsoever towards actually implementing the 14 words. If we continue to see any other reaction, the Northwest Front will remain the white man's white man. This must not happen, so change your behavior already and stop whining at us about why you choose to do otherwise. Since we're getting on in this shortcast and I've made my primary point, I really should wrap up with something you can put to use. First, a brief observation. The party, and especially Harold and I, are accused of being negative on an almost weekly basis, and this is entirely unfounded. Just about everything the NF puts out in terms of official material actually makes it clear what we all, collectively and individually, need to do about our current predicament. I personally go out of my way to include some sort of helpful or instructive material in every single one of my presentations for just this reason. All of the white cuctionalists out there do nothing more than whine about how things are and how we need some sort of different situation, and all the while they deliberately ignore the Northwest imperative, despite claiming to want nothing other than the Butler Plan. I'm going to spend the remaining portion of this talk giving examples you all need to emulate, and telling you why they're the examples I chose. For those of you who don't make this list, please don't take that personally. Generally, I pick people who have appeared on RFN one way or another, and I'm only going to reference things they've presented themselves because I don't want to accidentally spill the beans about something they don't want you to know about. Also, these are presented in no particular order, so again, could I please ask that no one read anything into this beyond what I'm explicitly saying? I'll name Harold Covington for obvious reason and move on since there's no explanation required. At the risk of breaking my arm patting myself on the back, I'll name myself next, but not for anything I've done since coming home. I did two very specific things which I need you all to do yourselves as well. Most importantly, I put almost daily time and effort into my own Northwest migration. I had the option to just sit back and act like I would never be able to come home, but I knew that wasn't honest of me, and I know it's not honest of you either. I wouldn't ever have come home if I didn't give the matter regular attention, so how about it, guys? Could a few more of you out there actually progress towards your own homecomings? And less important, but very obvious in retrospect, is that I kept my mouth shut. A part of this is that I didn't push the Northwest imperative on white nationalists I encountered, excepting one particular occasion when I was deliberately asked to do so. But the more critical aspect of keeping my mouth shut is that I didn't tell the party what it was doing wrong or what it needed to do in addition to its already burdensome workload. It's not that feedback is unwelcome, it's that someone genuinely concerned about their own Northwest migration isn't going to waste time on telling us something we either already know or can't do anything about. Interest is always appreciated, but past a certain point, it becomes obvious someone is only ever going to talk. While not a hard and fast rule, it's more or less the case that those who really do come home don't do a whole lot of talking because there's something else occupying their time. From here, I'd like to talk about Tom and Jerry. Most of you should remember them from a few years back on RFN when they were here on their scouting trips. These guys did exactly what they said they would do and came home according to the plan they made. Shortly after their scouting trip, Tom brought his family to our neck of the woods. Jerry had a legally binding commitment he needed to wrap up, but he was here permanently when he said he would be. And neither of them did a whole lot of talking about it either, because they were too busy actually taking care of business. Next up would be Mac and Kate. You haven't heard from them in a while, but that's because they're busy. I'm mentioning them because, in addition to Mac having shared his own difficult homecoming story on RFN, he and Kate continue to improve themselves and have always been incredibly involved in their jobs. Northwest migration is supposed to be the beginning of party involvement and life in the Northwest. Mac and Kate have setbacks like anyone else, but they always work harder and come out better than before. Part of my own homecoming required this sort of effort on my part to solve my own problems, and it seems like this is missing from many I'd migrate but stories listeners tell us about. I want to talk about a combination of Stefan and Annie, as well as Lacey and her family. It's true Lacey and her bunch haven't made it home yet, but they're working on it. At some point, everyone aware of the Northwest Imperative has to decide whether or not they're going to follow through with what they know to be right. Once that decision is made, though, it's time to get on with it in short order, or as short as is possible, anyway. Stefan and Annie stuck to their plan, even though it required quite a few personal sacrifices and provided a great example of how to get the job done. Lacey and her husband realized they needed to be about the business of Northwest migration, and sure enough, they've demonstrated a level of seriousness I have yet to see from anyone else. I know for a fact they're hard at work getting their ducks in a row and lining up their future situation in the Northwest homeland. I also wanted to call attention to comrades Don and AJ for the work they do on a regular basis to facilitate all the things they do as well as the projects for which they are personally responsible. They do an awful lot of support work others aren't able to, which goes a long way in terms of keeping us all functional. Again, please don't take it personally if you're not named on today's shortcast. There are quite a few comrades out there doing party projects, and while I appreciate each and every one of you, I needed to pick out examples appropriate for today's talk. I really ought to point out Phil from Oregon. A while back, the party was emailed a question regarding the constitutional prohibition on lawyering as a paid profession in the NAR, and Phil stepped up to explain the issue. His response was so spot-on and complete that Harold read it on RFN for the benefit of the whole audience. Not only did Phil come home, but he was familiar enough with the ideology underpinning the Butler Plan to explain important aspects of it to other people on demand. For purposes of illustration, let me contrast this with those of you who not only refuse to migrate or otherwise support the effort, but actually waste our time in some odd attempt to engage us on one aspect or another of our stated program because you can't be bothered to think it through on your own. One comrade in Idaho maintains a recommended listening list of past RFN episodes, and this is incredibly helpful because it is hard for one of us to imagine what is most beneficial to new listeners, and getting someone else's input here is crucial. I would also like to thank all of the new migrants I've met in the last 2 years. It's always a treat to welcome another family, and there have been a lot of them lately, to the Northwest homeland. I need periodic reminders that this thing really is happening, and at least some of you out there do accept your responsibility to your race. More and more, I get them. Hail victory.